So the Chinese hackers breach AT&T and Verizon networks in a major wiretap data theft, putting U.S. national security at risk. So apparently they've been in here since May, if I remember correctly. I'd have to refresh the article again to see for sure. But they got in here around May, and they've been tinkering around, gathering and storing and collecting a bunch of data. And effectively, what they've been doing is just spying on the general flow of data. Now, in theory, if you're all encrypted, all they can really kind of see is the metadata, who's connecting to what. But the fact that they had breached AT&T and Verizon networks is fascinating. Now, here is the biggest problem with this, how they did it. And this bears questions on other areas of our technical world. They actually got into here by using the systems. I can't get it to you right there. So because of the availability of wiretaps, the government has forced AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile to put effectively a backdoor in. So when a court says, yes, you can wiretap to spy on somebody, there's a backdoor into these networks that the police can tap into. Well, the Chinese hackers breached into that tool. So the Chinese hackers use the same tool law enforcement uses to wiretap people. That's the vulnerability. Now, where this bears importance is there has been this giant war against encryption. And the war against encryption says you need to have a backdoor so law enforcement can double check for bad stuff going in. Well, the problem is when you create a backdoor, you're creating a backdoor allowing hackers to get into the backdoor. They literally walked into the backdoor created and established for law enforcement to wiretap you. And then they proceeded to wiretap everybody. So there you go. There's your argument for not allowing this type of nonsense to happen. Palantir now owns about 9% of the Faraday Future, which is an EV startup. So they actually had a number of shares, but then there was some issues with the company, which caused them to have a revenue loss, but then they didn't fulfill their specific contract. And so Palantir goes in and starts negotiating with them to settle the deal, which ended up giving Palantir says, hey, that's fine. We're just going to own 9% of the company now. Now, here's where and why this is in the privacy sector. If you remember Palantir, based on that creepy all-seeing spyglass from Lord of the Rings, you know, anybody can look into a Palantir glass and see what any other glass is capable of seeing. And so that's kind of their goal, is to have this creepy network by which they create a giant grouping of data, and then they sell this to law enforcement or other people or companies in order to basically do a whole bunch of data on individual people. And so what ends up happening here is Palantir is effectively a data hog. They want to collect as much data as possible from every possible source. Well, what's the best way you can collect a bunch of different variable data? How about owning a large stock in an EV company that's all driving around with telemetrics and cameras, taking pictures of people in the car, people outside the car, driving around, seeing the neighborhoods? Basically, Palantir, by owning 9% of an electric car startup, can start doing a whole lot more data collection. And this is a terrifying and frightening thing. Honestly, we need to pass solid privacy laws, which would shut down a company called Palantir. We do not need an organization putting together this giant group of data in order to simply share it with anybody that wants to have data, especially since I never consented to any data being in there. Why is it that they can possibly profit off of my personal data that I never consented to give them? We need laws passed against this type of nonsense. But yeah, that's what Palantir is up to. That's exciting. Oh, Ars Technica is giving me that little bug again where it doesn't load the style sheets. There we are. This is our feature article. The good news about this is that FTC and FCC are starting to actually investigate the internet-connected television industry's data harvesting. This, if they do it with integrity, could possibly lead to the recommendation to have stronger consumer protection laws regarding data privacy. The biggest challenge we have is nearly every one of these data protection laws in the United States has more to do with informed consent than blocking people from utilizing the data. And that's the ultimate issue, because then it becomes this, we're going to force you to agree to our terms of service, and that waves away your informed consent. And, you know, look, for example, the IRS for a period of time said, well, if you want to use the online system, which you have to, because we don't answer our phones anymore. If you want to use the online system, you were forced to agree to the terms of service of a shady company called ID.me. And that raised a lot of problems, where now a government providing a service that is hoisted on the American people can't reach them without using an online account. And now the online account says, well, you have to use this corporate partner of ours. And then to use that corporate partner, you have to agree to onerous terms of service, which may include giving up your constitutional rights. So by being forced to pay taxes and having to interact with the IRS, you are forcing yourself to give up your constitutional rights by working with a third-party private company. I'm sorry, such an arrangement should be 100% illegal. Whoever suggested that should be flogged out of office. I'm telling you. And the same type of stuff is going on here, where you get this TV. Now, if I go to Best Buy and I need a new TV, I do not have an option of buying a dumb TV anymore. You know, we go down to, I was down there with Fresh Vintage down in Roanoke, and we go into the Best Buy down there, and he sees they're the last dumb TV they have in their store. It's an open box deal. He's like, yeah, I think I want to buy this guy. Last TV there in the store. Well, if I go to any Best Buy anywhere or a Walmart and I say, I want a dumb TV that doesn't connect to the internet, they're like, look at you like a cow looking at a new gate. You know, but why would you want that? You know? And the fact of the matter is, if I buy one of these smart TVs because I need a TV and this is the only one available, I am now forced to agree to the terms of service for a product I don't even want to use the terms of service for. And the problem is that almost every one of these TVs, they have built-in microphones. They have built-in cameras. The advertisers for television are putting wavelengths into commercials to assess the effectiveness. They're literally putting in the type of data analytics to listen to what's on the TV, comes out. It is collected by your smartphone. The data is sent back up to the data analytics company, and then they can measure, did you buy a product that you saw the ad for on television based on the subsonic wavelengths that are being heard? That sounds conspiratorial, like I should be wearing a tinfoil hat, but it is not. Like, don't be like, well, prove it. You prove it. You look it up. I've read the reports. I've read the articles. I've read the technical specifications. They are actively doing that. Go look it up. All right. That's the type of stuff they're getting at here. And so every one of these TVs is smart. Every one of these TVs has massive amounts of data collection. Every one of these TVs has a terms of service that you are waving away every single right you possibly have. Or waving away your constitutional right to a jury by trial. You're waving away your right to COPA in many cases, saying that by turning this television on, you're agreeing that we can collect the data of your minor children and use it how we want, you know. But we're not intentionally collecting data of children under 13. You know, we're going to protect ourselves in every possible way and screw every little guy to every nth to the degree. So now the FTC and the FCC are investigating. They release a 48-page report looking at the data harvesting and starting to raise some awareness. This is a good thing. We need solid, comprehensive data laws saying no company may possess any data for any person without having explicit written consent, and then they may only have the data required for the minimum amount of transaction required. So, yes, it kills the entire data mining industry, which possibly puts hundreds of thousands of people out of jobs. Fine. We can support them. Trust me. Look at how many people are coming over the border. We don't have a problem giving them money. My Lord. Okay? So the problem we have now, in all honesty, yes, it will cause some job loss in some of these industries. You know what? Go learn programming. good enough for the goose is good enough for the gander. Find an industry that is not entirely based on this kind of stuff. But they looked at all of these different reports. They looked at all the different privacy policies and said, yeah, there's a serious problem and we have no real way of doing anything about it. They note misleading privacy policies have minimal information on data collection and tracking methods and the use of marketing tactics like cookieless IDs and identity graphs that make promises of not collecting data or sharing information meaningless. Then they're feeding information into AI in order to better analyze the data. And then now they're also questioning things like, are they collecting data about drugs you might use or religious affiliations or other protected classes? Because we know that there's been cases where Facebook, for example, was they were not advertising to certain demographics regarding rental properties, which is completely against Equal Opportunity Housing Act. So, you know, you can't say, I don't want to target ads to this particular demographic when I'm renting a house. You can't do that. That's against the law. So you can target demographics if you're selling a pair of headphones. You can't target demographics if you're selling a rental property. It is against the law. And so they're looking at the potential discriminatory impacts and basically saying, yeah, there's effectively no regulation, any of this kind of stuff. So we are starting to see a lot of really good possible things going on here. And that is certainly an issue to keep in mind. And let's move on over to security news next. First up in security, an iPhone flaw could read your saved passwords out loud. Update now. So this is a new feature inside of, I believe it was 18.01, I think, 18.0.1, which is allowed for accessibility stuff. And inside of the accessibility stuff, then one of the things would be is, hey, we're going to read the screen to you. Well, the problem is it started reading your passwords out loud, which is obviously a big problem. We can't be reading your passwords out loud like that, you know? And so that certainly was an issue at hand. So with that, they did push out the update. I think it's 18.0.1, which patches this. This is the one that patches it. So 18.0, I guess, is the one that will read your stuff out loud for you on the iPhone and on the iPad. Now, there is a way to turn this off. You can go in and if you do, let's see, there's automatic updates. Anyway, there's a spot in there where you could turn that feature off. But the problem is if you needed that accessibility option, it would be reading your passwords out loud. So make sure you update your system and then that'll be good. All right. So the second article here is Microsoft detects a growing use of file hosting services in business email compromise attacks. So this is just the hackers getting better and better at all of the various stuff that they are doing. And so what is going on here is, rather than scammers sending out mass emails with, you know, the malicious files, which are being caught up in all of the detection software, now what they're doing is they are using legitimate services, tying in accounts, and then connecting those files directly to a user. The same way if you're using Dropbox or OneDrive, you can say, I'm going to share this file with this guy in my organization. Well, when you share a file like that, there's no security check on the file being shared. You only get the security check if it's going through email. So what they're doing now is the hacker compromises the service, whether it's OneDrive. I think they mentioned three of them in the article here. SharePoint, OneDrive, and Dropbox. Those are the three ones they mentioned here. So you target those and you get into somebody's account. So once you get into the account, then you sign into the file hosting system, and then you create the malicious file inside the compromised user's hosting app. So they create all the files in here. Now the attacker shares the files with with restrictions to a group of targeted recipients. So they target people specifically in the account, and then the targeted recipient now receives access to the file, but because it's a sharing file in between, there's no security check on it. So now the recipient is required to re-authenticate before accessing the shared file, which they do, which now gives that information back to them. But then they are downloading the file, which goes into a spoofed out account, which now steals not only your login credentials, but also your MFA passwords as well. Isn't that glorious? So now you end up being part of this network. So now they're getting much more brilliant, and now, of course, laying the groundwork to, well, we have to, for your own privacy and protection, we have to scan all the files that you're sharing privately in between people now. You know, that's kind of the way it's going to go. So that is kind of what they're doing. They're utilizing these services, 9 different steps to infect a computer, but now it's targeted, so it's working a whole lot better, and people are not expecting as much, especially if they've compromised a person that you actually know. This is kind of like going back to the old Facebook scams, right? Somebody creates the Facebook account, scraping your legitimate friend's account, says, oh, I accidentally unfriended you, refriend me back. And then you don't know that it's not your legitimate friend. Now you're connected to them. Now they can engage you in their scamming or their phishing or whatever they're doing. It's the same general principle. Now you're just utilizing the file sharing in the midst of what is going on. And on to our last one here. Mozilla issues a specific patch. And inside of the patch here, then this has to do with the one of the developer tools. So if you're on Firefox, you push F12, you get a bunch of developer tools down at the bottom. One of those is a tool which will allow you to check HTML5 animations. And as those animations are going on, there was what is called a use after free vulnerability. So this is a memory error where you execute the application and then the memory then can then be accessed, allowing a code execution into the application itself. So this was a 0-day that was actually being exploited in the wild. We didn't get details about how it was being exploited for ultimate security, but effectively, if you simply land with Firefox, if you simply land on a specifically malicious website, then that is enough to cause whoever's running that site to do a code elevation inside of your Firefox browser and take control of your browser, which could then lead to getting a bunch of information. So there was emergency patches to everything Firefox. So Firefox 131.0.2, ESR 128.3.1, ESR 115.16.1. So if you're using one of those, you will be good. Oh, I'm sorry. Those are the ones that are impacted. So go to the next version up. 131.02, 115.16.1, 128.3.1. Those are the good versions. Yeah, those are the same numbers. What in the world is this doing? Vulnerability impacts these. Mozilla addresses these with the release. Dude, it's the same numbers. Just make sure you have the latest Firefox. I don't know what the hell they're doing. Look at this. Vulnerability impacts Firefox 131.01. Mozilla addressed the flaw with the release of 131.02. Okay, same numbers. Same numbers. Which ones are correct? I don't know. Update your Firefox, folks. And security affairs, shame on you. Fix your article. My Lord. That's exciting. Well, if you want to help support the channel, we do have a new book that is out. This is Code Red. This is the book that is the collection of the last 10 short stories we did for the supporters. You can now purchase the book. Anybody can. It's available anywhere you can buy a book online. I just have the links for the Amazon right now. So tlm.li/code red. Right now, that takes you to the Amazon page. Eventually, I will have that uploaded to a page dedicated to the book on one of my websites, which will have all of the links that I know of where they're all at. So you can go ahead and pick up the book a variety of different places. For now, that'll go to the Amazon link. Of course, anywhere you buy books online, then you can search for the book, Code Red, do Code Red with my last name, Murawski, there, and that'll find it anywhere you can buy books. It is available in a Kindle or like an ebook, a paperback book, or an audiobook file. Of course, if you're using Spotify, I believe you should be able to listen to it ad-supported on Spotify at this point in time as well. So you can go ahead and have a look at that book there. And with that, let's move on over to, I think we have data leaks next. So first up, inside of data leaks, Comcast customer data was stolen in a ransomware attack on a debt collection agency. So if you had Comcast and you weren't paying your bills and you were handed over to debt collection agency, Comcast used one specific company, and that one specific company was breached. That was a Pennsylvania-based company, Financial Businesses and Consumer Solutions. They were breached, and that ended up resulting in 230,000 customers having their data leaked. But it also impacted Truist Bank, also used them for recent factors, and they were also impacted in this. So if you have had debt collections from this particular company, then you are possibly included in the data breach, which leaked out some of your data. Also, if you've ever used MoneyGram, you might have leaked data as well. MoneyGram confirms a customer data breach. The money transfer company MoneyGram has notified its customers of a data breach in which it says certain customers had their personal information taken between September 20th and September 22nd, 2024. The investigation and the incident was discovered September 27th, still ongoing, but the number of customers remains unclear. So it says they got names, contact information, phones, emails, physical addresses, date of birth, social security numbers, government issued ID documents, other identification documents, bank account numbers, MoneyGram Plus reward numbers, transaction information, dates and amounts of transaction, and criminal investigation information such as fraud. Isn't that wonderful? If you've used MoneyGram, basically everything is leaked. They say only a limited number of customers' social security numbers and criminal investigation information was taken, though. That's good news, you know. At the time, MoneyGram announced on X they had taken certain systems offline temporarily to avoid any further compromise. That left a large number of worried customers trying to send money abroad to relatives. How exciting. Outage also affected MoneyGram partners, including Bank of Jamaica and UK's Post Office. UK's Information Commissioner Officer confirmed TechCrunch that the watchdog had received report from MoneyGram, and they are making inquiries. So, of course, lots more data breaches and things like that. With that, we're going to move on over to business news next. So first up in business news, actually our entirety of our business news is Google. So the first up, of course, Google started pushing this ad AI overview crap as the default. You search for something, and then, of course, here's all of the AI responses to the stuff you search for. And, of course, now they're starting to cram ads in there because clearly I ran my AI search and I wanted to see the ads. The AI is so smart, it knew I wanted to see the ads. Look at how smart Google's AI is. No, not really. But of course, if they can find a way to make a buck by selling you ads inside of your Google AI search results, then you can go ahead and get the ads. So look at this. So look at the text here. Stain remover, apply a stain remover. And then here's this. Hold on. Let's go back up to the top. Go back up to the top, dude. So you kind of see at the very top, you're searching for something. So how do I get grass stains out of jeans? Generating the AI. Here's some ways to remove grass stains from jeans. Here's cold water, hydrogen peroxide, liquid detergent, stain remover. And then we have some advertisements over here for the products. Here's your sponsored ads. Here, try these products for things. So there you go, guys. We're getting AI crammed now into the basic search results. Of course, who's even asked for the AI search results? But speaking of search results, Google is making a few changes. Now, it's unclear. The article that Malwarebytes is going is looking at the changes to the search user interface, looking at the A/B testing and looking at how the A/B testing here is working, what they're saying is that all of the security issues that they were having with Malvertising is failing this. Now, there's two things they're doing simultaneously. One of those is from The Verge here. They're testing verified checkmarks in search. So, of course, if you're now one of the big companies, now you'll get the verified checkmark. Yay! So us small companies like me, you know, I won't have the verified checkmark. So clearly I'm a scammer because, you know, I don't have the verified checkmark because I'm not part of the global cabal here that controls the universe. So, you know, they're trying these guys out. This guy is shown because Google's signals suggest this business is the business it says it is. Google can't guarantee the reliability. Well, that's good to know. They're testing that out, but they're also testing out how the search results show. And they're looking at this. Malwarebytes is looking at this in terms of the Malvertising. So if looking at Clockify, so free time tracking apps Clockify, the current UI looks like this. And the A/B testing version looks like this. So basically, they're wrapping up all of the URL type stuff inside of here. But as we talked about yesterday in our show with the advertising stuff, they're not really changing anything. So looking at download Clockify here, they're showing you the difference between the legitimate app and the malicious app under the A/B testing. This is it looks exactly the same. It's a malicious app. This is not going to the proper place. It still says, still using the company logo, still using the what should be the URL, still looks all the same. It's just when you click it, you'll actually see that, oh, this guy here is a international creator from Hong Kong that's redirecting us to this weird domain here, which is, of course, going to be malware. Isn't that wonderful? So they are still, they haven't solved any problems here. They haven't really solved problems with the verified check marks either. But, you know, we're starting to see some of these changes, which are not actually solving any of the problems. As we were talking about last night, hey, it's very simple, Google. Why don't you just not allow the advertiser buyer to manually enter what URL it's allegedly going to? Have to put the URL in and maybe do just a little bit of checking to make sure the URL matches something in the business that's legitimate and not malicious. So there is that. So neither one of those is working. And of course, the biggest news in the Google world today is that the court ruling has come down that starting November 1st, Google must allow third-party app stores to access its full Google Play catalog and to distribute their stores through Google Play unless the developers themselves choose to opt out. Now, this is the interesting one because Google has always allowed you to sideload apps and things like this. Of course, after they lost the lawsuit, then it came out that what they then had is some developers can restrict an Android phone from actually sideloading an app. So if you tried to sideload an app, even if it was a legitimate app and it wasn't coming from the Google Play Store, they would block you from sideloading the app and force you to use the Google Play Store instead, which is obviously seriously problematic because now you have a means for an app to be like, nope, you have to use our version on the Google Play Store. And they found, you know, it was the app developer could toggle that option or whatever else. So it's technically up to the app developer. But if it's my phone, I should be able to sideload an app if I want to. So with this, it is forcing now the developers to have the app store in Google Play. It's allowing people to use these other app stores. The other thing it does is the billing practices. So this frees the developers from the obligation to use Google Play billing for their apps, allowing the developers to have better flexibility and payment methods. In fact, this is one of the things that Patreon is fighting with Apple with. So if you go on to my Patreon page, you can buy the copy of Code Red in the audiobook or the ebook version. But if you're buying it, if you're accessing that on an iPhone or an iPad through Patreon, you're going to pay more for it because of the Apple tax. That's the extra money that Apple saying, nope, you have to do it. Now, if you go onto a computer, even a Mac computer, and just buy it through the web browser, it'll cost you what it costs you, not the extra Apple iOS upcharge. So that is kind of what the court ruling is trying to do here, is preventing companies from having to use Google's payment systems, because Google, in many cases, is asking for way too much money for some of these app developers to make. Now, on the other hand, there is a convenience to using the Google Play. If 90% of your people are using explicitly Google Play and they're like, I don't really want to enter my credit card number to a separate application on this device, you might lose a little bit of business if you do not use Google Pay. So there's an advantage to using it. The problem is, some people are saying the cost to use it is entirely too high. And so that really is what the boiled down question happens to be. So interesting to see that. And our last section, of course, we're going to have a look over at your favorite place and mine. Let's head on over to Sillyville, where we are starting with a non-tech article, but it is just too good not to pass up. Apparently, the Cookie Monster was speeding in Germany. Yes. A traffic camera captured the Cookie Monster driving his car, going 60 in a 50 zone in Germany, driving an Audi. So apparently the Cookie Monster drives an Audi in Germany. And the problem is that they can find the owner of the car. They can't ask the owner of the car to out himself to say, were you the one wearing the mask? Because if he says, I'm the one wearing the mask, then he's going to get another fine for wearing a mask. So they're not allowed to ask him or to force him to divulge if he was actually the one driving it or if the Cookie Monster actually borrowed his car. Regardless, it does look like the owner of the vehicle for his vehicle going through is going to have to pay the fine. And indeed, if it was the Cookie Monster actually driving the car, then, well, I guess the man can sue the Cookie Monster for racking up a violation. So come on, guys, come on. But the good news is the Cookie Monster is alive. He is in Germany, and he is apparently into the iron, the lead foot thing. And on to our government response. Of course, we're hearing all sorts of stories, so much so that FEMA has set up an entire web page on its site talking about rumors that aren't true. Like this one here, which apparently is fairly confirmed that, of course, if you look at FEMA's website, their first objective is DEI in their emergency response. Their second objective is to save the climate. And their third objective is to be prepared to help people in a crisis. That's problematic. And you can go right to FEMA's website right now and see 1, 2, 3. Those are the three orders. So in trying to save the planet, we cannot possibly have all these little gas engines running around. So what did they do? They shipped 3 pallets of electric chainsaws to a community to clear the trees. The problem is the community doesn't have power. Government efficiency at its finest. Which, by the way, California has banned small engines. You can't really go into a Lowe's anymore and buy a small engine. At least you won't be able to very soon. And however, it's really funny that California, when I was there just a couple months ago, and I was overnighting at a rest area, as I oftentimes do when I'm driving through a hellhole like California. And you get up in the morning and you're going around and go in, use the restroom. And there's the official California Highway Patrol maintenance crews are in there doing their regular maintenance. And guess what? None of them had electric engines. They were all using gas-powered leaf blowers, gas-powered lawnmowers, gas-powered everything, because even the California Highway Patrol knows electric stuff just doesn't work in every circumstance, okay? But here's FEMA doing its best deal to save the people by dropping off electric chainsaws to a community without any power. So here's a documentation for how they're working it. You got to have a 2-person team. They got to run this gas generator and follow behind the guy in the wheelbarrow with the electric lawnmower. There you go. So here you go. This is so on brand. Just going to check in on the build. Oh, wait, never mind. Government efficiency right here. Yes, let's put them in charge of healthcare. Yeah, never rely on them to do Never rely on the government to do anything. Zero emissions. Zero utility. No worries. It came from a preferred vendor making 1,000% margins. All good. We need all three pallets to get through one tree. Post-disaster is really the time when you get to see how terribly misguided it is for everything to run on electricity. That's true. Not rocket science, but somehow our government still can't manage to figure things out. There you go, guys. This is the town of Little Switzerland. Collected airlifted donations and distributed some to homes that have no power and are inaccessible. The community is self-organizing incredibly well. The only government response I've seen so far, almost all the pallets we've received are donations coming from citizens and organizations. Feds usually don't come up this far into the mountains. Who is scary up there, you know? So there you have it, guys. Save the planet. Now Ring security cameras are getting a powerful AI upgrade. Of course, they're not talking about tracking down the burglar. They're talking about utilizing the AI to figure out who inside of your house ate the last of the ice cream and knocked over the garbage can. Because, yes, the true colors are coming out. Ring security cameras are not about catching the bad guys in your house. You know, not that you can publish pictures of them, or not that they'll actually prosecute people who are doing illegal things. But no, the entire purpose is to put the Ring cameras inside of your house so you can spy on all of your family and then use all of the AI tools in order to do this. Now, this is part of the paid package, which is $20 a month, which allows you to save a number of video clips from the motion sensing of your cameras. So the camera goes off, takes a video clip of the motion, and then saves it inside of your platform. Now what happens is you can sort through, they're applying AI to this, so you can go ahead and you can sort through everything and see what's doing. So you can say who ate the ice cream, you can say who knocked over the garbage can, whatever else. But every one of their examples of this new AI feature deals with spying on people inside of your own house, not figuring out what happened outside my house. The true colors are showing. And so there you have it. They do say, let's see, where was it at? Oh, there's similar features for Nest coming soon. But that was a neat observation that they made here, that everything they talked about here had to deal with spying on people inside the house, not what's going on outside. So there you go, guys. That's fun. Well, this was fun. The AI, 18 plus AI companion, is it Muha AI? This is an AI girlfriend site is breached and user family fantasies are stolen. Oh, we have an update. I didn't see the update last night. Let's see. So a hacker accessed the bunch of the data. So basically you'd have this AI chatbot, which was designed for explicit proclivities. So you'd be chatting up this explicit proclivities and even sending sausage pictures over the AI to your AI. You would literally take pictures of your junk and send it to the AI. Like, who are you sending this to? Is it the guys with a big stock in Kleenex on the other side of the AI, the moderator team? I mean, what are they doing with all these photos, the sausage pictures that you're literally... And who do you think you're uploading these things to? It's an AI bot. You're only interacting with the AI bot, but the AI bot's supposed to reciprocate and things like this. And whoa, you know. And so the stolen data revealed users' real names, their sexual fantasies, linked them to real legitimate email addresses, which even included people who seemed to have proclivities towards people not in this this 18 plus group. Okay. And so in response to this, of course, the company basically says, oh, this is all private stuff, but apparently they are doing something with it, as the hackers have demonstrated they seem to have access to this. The hacker describes the platform as a handful of open source projects duct taped together. Apparently there was no trouble finding a vulnerability that provided access to the platform's database. The administrator says the hack was noticed a week ago and claims that it must be sponsored by the competitors of the uncensored AI industry, which, who knew, seems to be the next big thing. Administrator also said that the AI, Muha AI employee team of moderator staff that suspend and delete all not 18 plus related chatbots on the card gallery, Discord, Reddit, however, but in reality, when two people posted about a reportedly underaged AI character on the site's Discord server, the 404 Media, which broke the story, claims the moderator told them to not post that bleep here, but go DM each other or something. Frightening. One example of it. So this is funny here. 404 Media says it tried to contact dozens of people, including the data, including users who wrote prompts that discussed underage stuff. And not surprisingly, none of those people responded to a quest for comment. Needs to say those people are scrubbing their emails as we speak, maybe going offline, talking to attorneys. And yes, we did get an update. Apparently today there were reports this information in use for active extortion attempts. Whether or not this is based on actual activities on the platform or stolen. So basically, yeah, now people have all these crazy proclivity stuff, your real name and your email address. I guess it's just not that difficult to extort people based on this. I mean, you know who they are, and everybody uploads their contact list to Facebook. So, you know who everybody is. You could be like, hey, we know the stuff that you did on your AI chatbot. Oh, we thought this exchange was neat. Maybe your wife would like to see it. Or you can pay us some money. You know, so there you have it, guys. Don't engage in such things with an AI chatbot. Certainly don't be sending pictures of sausages to an AI chatbot. What is even the purpose of this? You must be mentally ill to take pictures of junk and send it to something that's not like a robot. I don't know. And no, this is not our last story, guys. It gets worse. Man learns he's being dumped by the dystopian AI summary of his texts. So this is the Apple AI, which is still in beta. So this guy is testing this out. And what the thing is supposed to do is the thing is supposed to respond to your, it's supposed to go in here and respond to your texts by giving you AI summaries. So here we are. We're living in a world, okay, where you cannot even read your texts anymore. You have to get a summary of your texts. We have become that brain dead. I mean, really, folks. We are that brain dead where we have to have a summary of our text messages. So this poor guy got the text breakup on his birthday. And the girlfriend texts in, apparently, I don't know, he didn't reveal the real text messages, but like, I'm sorry, this isn't working out. Hey, can we get arrange a time? I want to get my stuff in the apartment. I want to be as amicable as possible. So here's the AI text summary he gets. No longer relationship, wants belongings for the apartment. Sweet and to the point. Ah, you know, so here we have it, guys. We have to have AI to summarize our text messages because apparently we can't even read text messages anymore. Half the people are still using text speak, even though text speak was started because of the crazy nonsense it was to type in real messages across the 9-key keyboard. But now we've just gotten used to LOL instead of, you know, laughing out loud or whatever else. And abbreviating C-U, like C-U, you know. And then now we have to have AI to further abbreviate our already short, brain dead, ADD text communication. And yes, he says this is real. Yes, it happened yesterday. And yes, it was my birthday. So the AI summarized him. No longer in a relationship, wants belongings from the apartment. Get wrecked. So there you have it, guys. Good luck out there, folks. Well, if you want to help support the channel, we do have a Patreon page, patreon.com/TOMM. You can jump on over there, get access to our short stories. We actually put up the Code Red ebook and audiobook. If you are at the silver level or above, you can just download that for free. If you're the bronze level, you can buy those over on Patreon as well. We will be looking at putting those on the other supporter platforms as well, but we'll kind of see how this goes here, and I'm still looking at other options as well. That's actually over here on the shop. You can jump on over to the shop. You can pick up the Code Red audiobook, the Code Red ebook, or actually you can pick up the, if you are interested in reading the science fiction short stories, but not actually to be a an actual sponsor, you can just buy that now, which does include a copy of the audiobook, I believe, until the end of this month. So you can pick up the audiobook for the short story for this month as well over there on Patreon, patreon.com/TOMM. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you all next time.